Okay, so here we have a Gemara in Kiddushin Pei Aleph Amud Aleph. A pair in the smack in the middle of Pei Aleph Amud Aleph. A pair of statements by two contemporaries, Rabba and Rav Yosef. The last two shiurim we focused on Rabba's statement, Rabba's heter of Baala Be'ir. Baala Be'ir in Choshim Shem Yichud. Over the preceding two shiurim, we looked into number one, Machlok is Rashi and Tosfos. Is that a heter at all? We passed yes. And then digging into the details of how we define Be'ir and what the lumpus is that's driving it, which appears to be Machlok is Rashi and Rambam, many nafkaminas and achronim. Whether it's, again, according to Rashi, it seems like it's more narrowly understood as a practical consideration that the husband may actually show up here. And as such, there are achronim who dramatically, radically limit the applicability of the heter of Baal Be'ir to situations where that his showing up now is a real possibility. That he knows where she is, she's at home, and he's close enough that he could actually come home, as opposed to situations where he's Ba'ir, but practically he's not coming home, or situations where he's Ba'ir, but she's not even at home. She's somewhere else in town. He might even know where she is. Certainly isn't headed in that direction. And then we also spoke about the Pischei Tshuva, quote from the Chachmas Adam, adopting Rashi's position, vastly expanded the exception of Libo Gaspa. Right? The Gemara said, Baal Be'ir is mutter unless it's Libo Gaspa. And in line with the Rashi's approach, Chacham Adam said, Libo Gaspa is any time that there's a reasonable explanation for why they're together. Halacha L'maaseh, as we said, I think the is a big machlokes achronim, these different afkaminas on both sides. But the accepted approach is to follow the more lenient position of the Rambam, which is, after all, the language that the Shulchan Aruch adopts. That's the approach that the Chazon Ish adopts. The Dvar Halacha quotes the Chazon Ish repeatedly. And that's what the Chidah adopts and others as well. That as long as the husband is, it's the husband's proximity. The fact that the husband's in town that creates a different bent of mind. Even if the husband practically is not going to show up, but as the Shulchan Aruch quoted from the language of the Rambam, Eimas Bala Aleha. That was Sif Ches. And now in Sif Tes, we move to the next statement from Rabba to Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef tells us, Pesach Pashtuach L'shus HaRabim Ein Chosh Deshim Yishim Yichud. That's in the middle of Pei Aleph Amid Aleph. Pesach Pashtuach L'shus HaRabim. You have a door which is open to Rishus HaRabim, there's no concern of Yichud. That's in the middle of Payalf and Manalf. Smack in the middle of Payalf and Manalf. That's a good question. Immediately after Rabba says Baal Be'ir is Ein Choshim Shum Yichud, Rav Yosef says Pesach Pasuach Ein Choshim Shum Yichud. Now the first thing that strikes you, by the way, right away, and we're going to dig into details in a moment. First thing that strikes you right away, even though the Gemara intertwines the two, they're conceptually very different. Up until this point, our discussion has been almost exclusively about the model of matir that the Mishnah provides on Peyam Beis. Going back to my beginning, I said that Rabbi Shechter's line of how Yichud is the study of Kulis, Yichud is the study of Heterim, that is an Isra of Yichud. And the question is, what are the dvarim, what factors can be matir? So our focus up till now has been basically, almost exclusively, about shomrim, different varieties of shomrim. One shomer, two shomrim, male shomrim, female shomrim, how about if the shomeris is related to me? Even Baal Be'ir, in a sense, is sort of a shmira type of idea. It's other people who either are present or are nearby. See, even though we are beyichud, we're secluded, but it's mutter because of someone's presence, or mutter because someone could pop in. Pesach Pasuach, L'shus HaRabim, is saying not that there's a particular person who's being matir, who's saving us from yichud, but this is just not a private situation. This is not a yichud situation to begin with, because that's what it sounds like. The door is open to Shazarabim, so this is just isn't private. Now, in thinking about Pesach Pasul and Shazarabim, it sounds very simple. Post can point out almost all of those words need to be defined. Well, we have to talk a little bit about what Pesach is. Certainly, we have to talk about what does Pasulach mean, and we have to talk about what's a Rosh Hasharabim. Yassi.
It doesn't matter whether or not you know he would come in or not. Meaning, like, for example,
hold on to that point. We're headed there right now. Fantastic. So let's take a look at Shulchan Aruch. Se'if Tes, Yassi, your mom is, you have your finger on the pulse. That's excellent. Se'if Tes. We'll work our way down the page here. We'll start from the Shulchan Aruch near the top of the page. Se'if Tes, Bayis, Shepischo, Pasuach, Roshus HaRabim, Ein Chashash Lehisyached Sham Imerva. You have a house, a building, a room, the door is open to Shazarabim. There's no concern of Yichud with an Erva. Even though we're talking about what could be Yichud de Oraisa, it's just one man and one woman alone, and they are an Erva to one another. But if it's Pesach Pasuach, no concerns. If it's Pesach Pasuach, no concerns. And let's take a look right away. We'll come back to the comments of the Chalkas and Mechalkik in the Beis Shmuel. But let's turn our attention first, further down the Amun, to the Pischei Tshuva. Here the Pischei Tshuva is below. I think we spoke about this in the past. And even the Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch, the page is sort of set up like a page of Gemara. You have the two major notes that came in Rashi and Tosfos position, but there's so many Sforim that want to fit on the page that below the Chalkas here, it's in Ebenezer, it's Chalkas, Mechokin, and Beis Shmuel, they put in loads of Sforim on the bottom. So the first layer down is the Bar Hetev, who appears in all four Chalkas Shulchan Aruch, and who even made it to the pages when the Mishnah Berurah was reprinting Shulchan Aruch with Hidon Perushim. Bar Hetev is one of the three Mefarshim that he carried over together with Shari Tshuva and Baragola. Barhet is one of the three Mefarshim he carries over from the classic page of Shulchan Aruch to the Mishnah Berurah page of Shulchan Aruch. Barhet gives you the often the basics. Sometimes he'll summarize what the two major Mefarshim Rashi Tos position have to say. He'll add, in Evan Ezra special, add other things as well. So the Bar Hetev is something important to say. And the Pesach Tshuva is something very important to say. Let's start with the Bar Hetev. You see the Bar Hetev right below the Shulchan Aruch, Sifkat and Tess, right over here. You see the letter Tess. Let's skip the first line. For now, because we'll come back to the topic in the first line. That's an important detail, but a detail. Let's cut to the core issue that he discusses. Again, in the Bar Hetev, right below Shulchan Aruch, the second line. Hard to pischo pasurach l'rishus harabim ein choshin. When you tell me that if it's pesach pasurach l'rishus harabim, you have an open door to harabim, then you're fine. In other words, if you're in rishus harabim, it would be fine. Or even if I'm not in rishus harabim, but there's a direct door open to rishus harabim, that this space is fine as well. He says, what do you mean, Rishus HaRabim? What's Rishus HaRabim? He says, Dafka Bayom Ava Balayla Lo. It's only a daytime din, not at night. Now, those who have learned Masechet Megillah, remember, there's a Mishnah there on Dafchaf. It talks that mitzvahs only apply during the day, mitzvahs only apply during the night, right? A halal and lulav and milah is only during the day, and Sfiras HaOmer is at night. It sounds like, well, okay. Pesach Pasuach is totally in day versus night. I mean, okay, day versus night. So Pesach Tshuva says, no, I don't mean like that. I don't mean halachic day and night. I don't mean that after Tzeisach Kochavim, Pesach Pazor doesn't work. Uvalayla Nami, the Hetev says, Davka b'shtei shos o gimel shos v'yosef. 2-3 hours into the night. My, how times have changed. Shebnei adam etzuyim b'vateim. 2-3 hours into the night, everyone's at home. V'ein over v'shav. There's no longer any traffic. By 9 o'clock, who's outside? By 9 o'clock, everyone's home already. Right? Now, remember, before Thomas Edison radically Right. Thank you. Revolutionized society in so many ways. Between the electric grid and electric lights, he totally changed the way people think about time. It used to be, it got dark. It used to be very expensive. Light used to be cost. Think about how many minutes, hours, days, weeks you had to work in order to afford several hours of lighting your home. That has changed dramatically. Take a look at Ayin Shum, the rational optimist. It used to be very expensive to light your home. So usually it got dark, and it got dark outside, it got dark inside. Maybe you had, you know, candlelight or whatever for an hour or two, and it got dark. If you've gone camping, you know that by 10 o'clock at night, you're exhausted because you're living naturally. And it gets dark, and your body, it's dark outside, it's dark inside, and you get tired, and you go to sleep. That's unless you need to stay up. So that used to be the way. People also got woke up when it got light. Also, not necessarily still the case. Edison changed the fact that it's dark outside. He changed the fact that it's dark inside. Because all of a sudden we have outdoor lighting and we have indoor lighting. And the way our circadian rhythms are different. The way we think about time is different. But it used to be, still is true on some streets, but not on other streets, it used to be a derapasha, a couple hours into the night. It would be incredibly rare to have people outside. So if there's a little traffic, that's still the case, depending on where you live in an urban area, a suburban area, still the case. So he says it's only when there's still traffic on the... when I say Laila, I mean that there isn't really much traffic on the street. Ain't over v'shal. Ava b'chatzi shasha Laila, half hour after dark. She b'nei adam over v'shavim. V'adai, if you hear the half hour into the night, that should remind you of a riff that we saw not long ago, right? And the next couple of words should remind you as well. Adayin lo kol sar regel min ashuk. Right? That language comes from? Which Masechta? Masechta Shabbos, right? And so the Rif says, kol sar regel min ashuk means a half hour. He says, look, that's why nowadays you could light, in many places you could light, when I lived on Amsterdam Avenue, you could light Neres Hanukkah at 1 o'clock in the morning, maybe. And there's still traffic on the street. He says, kol sar regel traffic on the street is fine. They quote that from the Knesset HaGedola. Okay, one of the early Achronim. So what did the Pesach Teshuvah just tell us? When we say Rishos HaRabim, Pesach, Pasuach, Rishos HaRabim, what's the Rishos HaRabim? It has nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos. It has nothing to do with open versus closed, roof versus no roof. We already saw that in the Gemara, if you remember. In the Gemara on the top of Pe'al from Al-Alf, the story of Rav and Rav Yehuda, where they're concerned with Yichud, on an outdoor trail on the road in the forest, right? So yichud isn't driven by whether there are walls and doors or whether you're outdoors. It has to do with the amount of traffic. So that's what the Knesset HaGedola is picking up on. That Rosh Hashanah means that it's a trafficked area. I think that the Dvar Halacha quotes from more recent Acharonim. They talk about people walking by every 5-10 minutes. If I'm in a place, if we're sitting in a place where people aren't on top of us, but we're in eyeshot of people who are passing, but the road's over there and everyone can see us, and people pass by every 5-10 minutes, that's fine. Once you see, so let's say, there'll be plenty of situations where you want to be visible, but you won't want to be audible. Right? Not a good date. Or for some other reason, having an important private conversation. But you don't want to be in yichud. So no one has to be close enough to hear you, they just have to be able to see you. So if you find a place where people walking by, you're sitting on a bench over there, the street's over there, but people can see you, and every 5-10 minutes people passing by, that's Pesach Pasuach L'Shus HaRabim. As you're moderating, as it gets later and later, you notice that you haven't seen anyone in a while, so it's gotten late enough that traffic is dying out, then it's time to move to a different location. Yeah.
What about a place where people can come?
Okay, great. So now you're touching on the question that Yasni raised, and that brings us to the Pesach Teshuvah. We defined Rishos HaRabim, and now let's move back to talk about what's Pesach, what's Pasuach. What do you mean doors open? Pesach Teshuvah says like this. They're moving down right below the Barayta Pesach Teshuvah. Sif Katan. Sif katan ches. Sivka and Tesla Pizchet Tshuva reviews what we just saw in the Bar Heitev, according to the Knesset Agadola, about Rosh Hashanah. Sivka and Ches is about Pasuach. Ayyim Bitshuvas Rabbeinu Akiva Eger. We've heard of him. Simon Kuf. You've heard of Akiva Eger before. You might not have realized it, but Akiva Eger was not only said brilliant Shiurim in Gemara Shetaisis, he also wrote brilliant Tshuvas, the Halacha Lamaisa. That's not a dichotomy. It's not either your Alamdin or your Paisik. Those are supposed to go hand in hand. He did say brilliant, brilliant Shiurim in Gemara Shetaisis. Shechter told me, apparently they write in the biographies, that he, for a while, the area where Akiva Eger lived, there was it was illegal to own a Gemara. Local religious persecution. They didn't stop you from learning Torah, but they stopped you from owning Gemara. So guys, and apparently he had like hundreds of Talmidim who would memorize the Masechta before they came, because his shiur was diyukim in Gemara Shetaisus, and no one had a Gemara. And hundreds of guys would memorize the Masechta Gemara Shetaisus in advance so they could follow a whole Zaman's worth of very involved on the blot shiur. So it speaks volumes of the Talmidim's dedication to learning and their excitement. They could have gone to other Rebbeim to learn also in other parts of Europe where they would not have had the same restrictions. This speaks the degree of excitement they had to learn under Akiva Eger. Okay, he was a Gaon HaGaonim in Lamdas, Charifas, Psak Halacha Lamaisa. It's all meant to be one whole Miksha Achas. So Akiva Eger in Simon Kuf in his Tshuvas and the Beis Meir in his Tshuvas, they both write, Kosav de Ikala Medak Mizeh. HaPesach Sosum. It has to be an open door policy. As opposed to the door is closed, well, yeah, I mean closed but not locked. Afilo Eino No. If it's closed but not locked, that would not be okay. If it's closed but not locked, that's a problem. That's the mamish open. Afilo eno no. Again, we're in the Pesach Tshuva Sivkan Ches. The Rebbe Akiva Eger Beis Meir held that if the door is closed but not locked, if Pona Rishus Rabban, it faces Rishus Rabban or Pasuach Lachatzer or to whether it's a Rishus Rabban or a Chatzer, you have a shared space not open to the public, but in many other families. Let's say like an apartment that opens into the shared hallway. V'hu ima b'yichud b'habayis, and he and she are alone in the house. Havi yichud. Even though the front door is unlocked, but it's not wide open, Riki ve'egen beis meir's held, that is a problem. Pesach pasuach means pasuach, mamish. V'chei mashur b'kidushin, Umay the Isa but Shuvas Harajba now Rikiv Eger Beis Meir Gedolei Achronim, the problem is, but there's a Rajba. Rajba also wrote Shuvas. The Rajba on Gedolei Rishonim writes, and he seems to write his Shuvas. That's fine. The Ein Yichud Atchei Abay is Noel B'Minol. Rajba writes in Shuvas that Pesach Pasuach means that the door is not locked. The Pasuach just means unlocked. Not wide open, not ajar. They said, no, that's a toe sofa. That's a mistake. But now, again, you have to realize, before we go further, the godless of the Pesach Tshuva is in the last, how many lines of Pesach Tshuva did we just read? 1, 2, 3. 3 lines of Pesach Tshuva, he just summarized and encapsulated pages of Rebbe Akiva Eger and Beis Meir. And Rebbe Akiva Eger, they were not wasting their time when they wrote their tshuvas. They're densely written. The brilliance of the contribution of Pesach Tshuva was his ability to give executive summaries. And he's basically, that's what he does throughout Shulchan Aruch, is to access hundreds of svarim of shalos and tshuvas that are written since the days of the Shulchan Aruch, and sort of adding Shulchan Aruch in the 1500s, we saw the other day. Just yesterday, when Torah Makkah, right? What did he say? He finished in 1563. Right? So, Gematria Sicha. So the Pesachei Tshuva of Eisenstadt was a Yakesherav. So he's given the next 200-300 years of Tshuva literature, and it's drawing from several hundred Svarim, and Mamish giving you like bottom line. Sometimes they'll give you a tiny bit of, like you're seeing here, Mamish, like the Rashi Prakim of the some of the argumentation, also a little bit of the Rias. It's amazing. It's not, at the same time, it's not meant to be complete. So when he says Tohu Sofer, that means you take a look in the Kiveya Beis Merit, they'll give you discussion and Rias, and here's why, and so on and so forth. But he's just giving you sort of, this is the view from 30,000 feet. This is the executive summary. We'll take a question in a moment. Ayin Sham, is it take a look there? And you take it. Open a Bekiveger, open a base mayor, and you'll see the shock of attire that they have. But in brief, their approach is that they have the, they're taking the more machmir position here, a narrower view of Pesach Pasuach. Pasuach has to be mamish Pasuach, has to be open, as in wide open, not just unlock. Achein ra'isi b'tshuvas radvaz. Pesach Tshuva says, okay, that should be the position of Bekiveger and base mayor. That's one opinion. 1700s, 1800s. There's another opinion, the Radvaz. Radvaz was an Egyptian, if I remember correctly. He was an Egyptian, very late Rishon, very early Achron, Rabbi Ben David ben Zimra. I think it's the last major sefer that was written in Egypt. The true is Radvaz. Rambam, several centuries earlier, lived in Egypt. He wrote some rather significant svarim. But I believe Radvaz are like the last major sefer written in Egypt. He has, if I remember correctly, several thousand tshuvas. I think he's one of the most prolific tshuva writers. Radvaz ranks up there with the Rashba and several others. Unbelievable! It's staggering. It gives you a sense of how broad an area was turning to him with their shilas, directly or indirectly. He's answering so many. It also means probably that he had Talmidim, he had dedicated, he probably had a very dedicated cadre of Talmidim who were copying for him. That's the way Tshuvas, the way we have Tshuvas Svarim is that someone was writing copies. They didn't have carbon copy and they didn't have scanners. It meant the Rav would write a Tshuva and before it was mailed out, someone would sit down and copy it. So there would be one copy that goes into the files and then the original gets sent to the Shoel. That's the preferred way to have a Tshuva Sefer. The other way is to try to go around to people after the Rav passes away and try to gather as many letters as you can of people who receive them. There's a line in Tshuva Saraj, but it talks about the Talmud. Can the Talmud copy it over before it's sent down to Chol HaMoed? In terms of Melech's Chol HaMoed. So there you see that was a technology. Technology was, you had a Talmud who would be the human copy machine. So Radvaz and Rajva apparently had very dedicated Talmidim who copied thousands of Tshuvas. So here we have Radvaz. Chelok Alv Simen Kufcha Falv. So Radvaz, a century or two before Bekiveg Beis Meir, Ha'etik Lashon Rajba now. He copies over, he quotes the language of the Rajba, who is Mekel, V'lo Kasav Shetov Sofer whom. Unlike Bekiveg Beis Meir, he does not chalk up that Rajba to Tov Sofer. In other words, Radvaz apparently felt that the kula of the Rajba is accurate and dispositive. That is the din. V'sham ha'erich l'chlok al chacham echad. He goes on to say, okay, he gets involved in further details, that essentially Radvaz seems to touch on the point that the Bar Heitev made, B'Shem Knesset Agadola, there still has to be a situation where people, where it's not, you know, the dark of night, and there is access, but again, to make a long story short, and then we'll make it long again, we have a Mach Pesach Tshuva's coin, a Machlokas between the Bekiveger and the Beis Meir on the one hand, versus the Radvaz, and perhaps the Rajba. On the other hand, what does Pasuach mean? And this is the issue that Yossi had raised, this is the issue that Yaakov had raised. What does Pasuach mean? Does Pasuach mean unlocked? Does Pasuach mean wide open? And let's expand a little bit. What does that mean? What are they arguing about? What's the issue? What's the issue? It's core. I mean, it's the issue of translation. But it's core, yeah, what would you say? Izzy?
I was just thinking, the ability for someone to, come in or open and see it, as opposed to literally out of an open and someone can try and see without trying.
Right. Yeah, what do you want to say? Very good, yeah.
A little bit
kind of like we were talking before, where is it more of a feeling like someone can come in, or is it physically like someone can come in?
Ooh, that's interesting.
If the door is open, you know anyone can literally just pass by and see it in there, and see you having, see you be with Yichud with someone, you don't want them to see that. But if it's closed, that means that you, there's a feeling like someone may come, because truthfully, why would anyone go and be opening doors that supposedly you think that this is in a private space somewhat? A lot of people, so it's just more of a feeling that they're going to come, that you're right next to, or it's just around.
Yeah, so you're both raising important issues, and you were going to say?
I was going to say, it might matter if we're talking about being people being able to walk into the room or people being able to see you.
Yeah.
Glass doors.
So thank you for wrapping it up. Thank you for wrapping up. Very, very, very well. Let's put what everyone said together. Achronim are clear that Dvar Halacha, Dvar Sofer from quote for early Achronim, even the Mekilim, even the Radvaz, the post-Kumat, this is very important. Even the Radvaz has to be handled with care. Even the Radvaz, who says it's enough the door is unlocked, there has to be a situation where people, it's reasonable to assume that people might actually come barging through the door. Maybe knock and look in. There's a fact, if I live in a community, when different communities are different. You live in a bungalow colony where people are in and out of each other's bungalows all the time, that itself may sometimes be extreme and inappropriate. Privacy is important, and family privacy, the privacy of family space is actually an important Jewish value. Matovo Alecha Yaakov. But be that as it may, if you're in a situation where people might just come in, or even they'll be appropriate, they'll knock and then come in, but when it's really reasonable to assume that people will come in, that's what the Radvaz is making on. Now, the fact that if the door is unlocked, but there's no way that anyone's just walking in, even the Radvaz would not allow that. Even the Radvaz, which it says it's not null, means it's not null and there's a real chance that people are coming in. I said, what are Rikki Vager and the base mayor asking for? So that's what I think that is generally assumed, that Rikki Vager and the base mayor, who say it has to be wide open, they're saying it's not enough that people might come in, you have to actually be visible. And that's the question. Is it only visibility, which is matir? Anyone walking by can see me? That's a high standard in order to be matir. Or do you say, like the Radvaz, it's like even if they can't see me, but there's a chance, there's a real chance that someone might come in. I think it's a Dvar Halacha who quotes from the Dov of Meisharim, the Chabina Rav, who expanded this, that it could either be the door is unlocked and maybe left ajar if need be, and it's a situation where it's reasonable that there's a significant likelihood that people actually come in, or Shabina Rav says it could also be a case where particular people have the key and you expect, it's a real possibility that particular people are going to show up. Now, I think it's generally assumed that even when you rely on particular people showing up, you would leave the door unlocked, if only because to lock the door at the very least is like a shtickle mechur hadavar, like it doesn't pass the sniff test. So in most cases, again, mechur hadavar is, as we've discussed in the past, sort of a case-by-case decision. But generally speaking, even if you rely on particular people showing up, you're going to want at the very least to have the door unlocked and perhaps left at least ajar. But that's what that's the way the Dov of Meisharim, the Shabina Rav, expands the concept of the Radvaz. And let's talk about this a little more. Everyone agrees to Rabbi Akiva Eger and the base mayor's kula. In other words, everyone agrees that if you're visible, it's good enough. That's for sure. That's the gold standard. If you're visible, that's all you need. The shaila is, if I'm not visible, but there's a real chance that people might walk in. There, Rabbi Akiva Eger and base mayor say, that's not enough to be matir. And Radvaz says, yes it is. But if you're visible, that's gevaldik. So visibility is very important. And that's what's behind me and in front of me right now. Because the gold standard is visibility, if there's a window, either like a window and a door, and people are walking by the hallway, and anyone can see in, that's fantastic. Or you're at the window to the outside. And I'll share with you a maisa that I had a chance to tell some of you just last night. And I think it's a glorious maisa on so many levels. Last night I had a chance to give a yichud and harassment presentation to the Debate Society. That's just cool. Spoke on the power of a doorstop. A doorstop is a way to have Pesach Pesuach. They tell the following story by Rabbi Chaim Ozer. Chaim Ozer was the author of Shulchan Aruch Yezer, a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant Talmud Chacham. Not every Talmud Chacham needs to be brilliant. An important point that I think we've spoken past about that letter that Hutner has. All these embellished biographies that present every single Gal of the Torah as a perfect person since birth, that's not really helpful to people who are human and therefore are not perfect. And it points out that the vast majority of the Gal were not just naturally brilliant and amazing and always perfectly compassionate and Bikim and Shah, Bikim of Tanakh by age 2 and Bikim of Shah by age 3. But there were, you don't have to be a genius to be a Gadol Torah. There were some who really were geniuses, and Chaim Ozer seems to have been one of those. They describe him as being able to truly multitask. And again, maybe the descriptions are exaggerated, but they don't say things like this about you and I, or about you and me. And they describe Chaim Ozer as like, the way they describe it, he's like on the phone, like you would walk into his office and he was like on the phone or maybe even on two phones and supposedly writing two different shuvahs with two different hands. And they were like, the butchers are there talking about shechita problems and a woman is there with a shayla and this one is coming in for stuck. And like, they're like managing like an office and like doing really multitasking. Again, that the description is probably exaggerated, but he was clearly a very unusual mind. Between the two wars in particular, between World War I and World War II, he was carrying the weight, not only the halachic leadership of much of Eastern Europe, Litva in particular, and much of Eastern Europe in general, but he was also carrying their political leadership. And really trying to figure out, especially as World War II drew closer, trying to figure out how to save as many Jews as possible. He was very about Vilna, a little bit of the history. Holocaust history, there was this... unique Ashkenazi practice, the way things shook out, Vilna became sort of like almost an international city. It became this nexus of where people gained, able to get into Vilna on one end and then able to leave on the other end. And he was very, very, very involved in Tzarchi HaKol. And there are several stories about his focus on individual people that is all the more impressive because when you realize how capable he was of doing multiple things at the same time, and how many things he needed to take care of for so many people. And here's a story about how he was able to zone in and give time, dedicated time, a lot of dedicated time to one person who needed it. It's that much more inspiring. But the story goes that there are several such stories. I'll tell you the Yichud related one now. The story goes that he's approached by a young woman. She says she needs to talk to him. How can I help you? What's the issue? So she says that she's getting married since Baruch Hashem, Mazel Tov. How can I help you? So she explains to him that she's a Yesoma. She had, I don't know if she had a father, but she had no mother. And in addition to the many ways, obviously, that impacts her life, and the many ways in which it made getting married certainly a bittersweet moment, a moment she's not going to be sharing with her own mother, who was no longer alive. So he also has a practical, and in addition to the fact, obviously, in terms of the finances of a wedding and marriage, that makes it all the more complicated. In addition to all that, nowadays it's typical that before a couple get married, they'll learn Hilchos Nidah typically with Rabban with Rebbetzin. They'll have either one-on-one, or you have chassan classes and kallah classes, where people have a chance to learn practical Hilchos Nidah in advance of getting married. At that time, in that location, what was typical was that you would sit down with a parent. A young woman getting married would sit down with her mother, and her mother would teach her practical Hilchos Nidah. She said, I don't have a mother. I imagine it probably means she didn't have other adult female relatives either. Families had been torn asunder by the instability and the tragedies that were going on at the time. So there probably were no ants either. She said, I have no one teaching me Hilchos Gittin. Can you help me? Can you teach me? Now, so he's thinking to himself, on the one hand, of course he wants to help her. On the other hand, he's going to sit with her. This is a private conversation. So what's going to be with Hilchos Gittin? What's going to be with Ichud? Now, he could have taken her for a walk in the park. He could sit at a park bench or walk up and down the streets of Vilna. But beyond awkward for her. On the other hand, Ichud. So he said, sure, have a seat. And he stood like this at the window of his study, and for the next hour or two or three, patiently, slowly taught her all of the Hilchos Gittin. So I'll take it right now. So she was sitting comfortably, she had her privacy, and he stood at the window. So everyone could see, everyone walking by could see him, that obviated any problem with Yichud. But no one, she were to walk in the street, no one had to see her. She was comfortable, she had her privacy, and it speaks to being ambitious in both B'nav L'chadeiro and B'nav L'makom all at the same time. And he sacrificed, it's not an either or. He neither sacrificed his Yichud, nor did he sacrifice being exquisitely sensitive to her both practical and emotional needs at the moment. Yeah.
So what I was saying before, what if you said that if the thing is anyone can come in at any time, whatever it is, but you would know they were coming beforehand. Like, you know, like those stores where you like open up the door and it rings or something like that?
Right.
So meaning that it's a public building, anyone can come in, but you get like a warning before they did so. Like
yeah, so it probably depends how much warning you have.
Like,
we talk about seconds or minutes. Now there are horrific stories of some of the stories of abuse that have come out of late involve people of these very, very Rahman and Slum, very, very involved schemes for how they could monitor who was coming in so they could abuse at will and know when someone's about to walk in. Some of these people had cameras, and some of these people had bother, all sorts of different devious, criminal, sinful setups for them to know when someone's about to walk in. In most cases, so, if you deal with the Russia, you should obviously stay far away. In general, if you're going to have seconds of notice, you're fine. I'll give you an example. This comes up, and we were just talking about Chalona Pasuach Rosh Hashanah, like Chaim Eiser, that for sure that works well as long as either he or she is visible to people passing by, it's fine. Versus opening the door. So one of the times that this comes up is in a medical context or in a psychological context. How do you organize? How does a doctor see a patient of the opposite gender? Or how does a psychologist see a client of the opposite gender? So again, the gold standard is visibility. So if I have a window in the door and there are people passing by in the hallway, or if I have an office that faces a public space, a street or somewhere else where there's traffic, and let's say the client has privacy, but the therapist is visible through the window, and that's your gold standard. For a while, when Mrs. Sheffield first joined the staff, now she has an office with the door that's always open, and that's how she, but it's a long enough room that no one passing by can hear the conversation, but everyone can see in, and that's how you avoid Yichud. Originally, when she first came, she was in the space which Mr. Hurt now uses, so that end of the mezzanine. And it was arranged with sort of a screen across part of the width so that anyone who came to talk to her was behind the screen, but she was sitting facing the screen, so anyone walking by could see her, but not whoever she was talking to. That's one way of organizing the situation, so that you rely on re'iyah, you rely on visibility.
Right,
so but let's say if you're talking about a doctor's office, you typically don't want to have a window in the door of a the room where the doctor is doing the exam room, because you want to have privacy. You don't want people walking by to see a patient half undressed. The patient wants privacy. Privacy, but not too much privacy. So how do you work that out? So one of the solutions is, and this is a conversation I've had with different doctors, is let's say if the doctor is going to close the door, this patient wouldn't want the doctor to leave the door wide open. You want the door closed, but at the same time, the doctor, the observant doctor wants to avoid yichud. Perhaps the patient also wants to avoid yichud, either for halachic reasons or just for practical reasons. So either you have staff that comes in with you, other medical staff that comes in with you, but then it's not yichud at all, or one doctor in particular had the conversation with, so he arranged with his staff that they should always feel comfortable knocking and then cracking the door. Knocking and then opening the door, or cracking the door, open a drop, and then knocking. So you have a couple of seconds of lead time. Like you say, okay, just give us 10 seconds so she could put on her gown, let's say. But very, very minimal amounts of time. So that's Pesach Pasuach in the sense of people might come in. And that, again, brings us back again to where we started, then we'll take more questions. Let's go back to where we started. Let's add one piece, and then we'll take more questions. Coming back to where we started, again, what Rosh Hashanah means, that's pretty clear. It has to be an area of traffic. People pass by at least every 5-10 minutes, if not more. Indoor, outdoor, day, night, those are all just factors that help indirect factors that determine the real issue, which is there at least occasional traffic? Are there people passing by at least 5-10 minutes? If one say 5-10 minutes, if not more. And then the question is, what's my relationship to that Rosh Hashanah? Pasuach, that Rosh Hashanah. Does pasuach mean that we're actually visible? Or is it enough to just that those people might be randomly popping in? So let me add, in terms of halacha l'maisa, let me add one more, the third variable. And it according to many poskim, I believe, intertwines with the second issue. The issue of how you define Rosh Hashanah, that's pretty clear. The issue of how you define Pasuach, that's a big machlokas. Now let's work our way back up. I told you we would come back to the Beis Shmuel Chelkas Machokik. Let's take a look at that right now. Chelkas Machokik Nesif Katan Yud Gimel. They'll move, he's on the inside of the page, then we'll move across to the Beis Shmuel, also happens to be Sivkatan Yud Gimel. Right, Sichel, because Machokek, Ba'i Ba'i, Shepischa Pasuach, Lushos Rabin, here at the top right corner, Sivkatan Yud Gimel. He says, Nira, Hachinami, here too, Begasba, Uvekine La Asur, Pesach Pasuach is Mutter, yes, for most people. We spoke about so far when and where. Now we're talking about who. Pesach Pasuach is mutter unless it's libo gaspa or kinui. In other words, the same limitations you have on Baal Be'ir, you have on Pesach Pasuach. Remember, libo gaspa, that was a Gemara by Baal Be'ir. That was a story that there's more familiarity, there's more comfort. They've known each other for a long time, or they're somewhat related. Old peers, so then Baal Be'ir doesn't apply, and neither does... Right, Sechalakas Machokek, neither does Pesach Pasuach. Or Kinela. Or, there's a Kinela, I remember that when that being Trumas Hadeshin, that we came across right by Baal Be'ir, a sort of a particularly negative example of Libo Gaspa, is where the husband suspects his wife of cheating on him with this other fellow. And the husband said to his wife, in front of Aden, I think something's going on between you and him, and I don't want you to be, you should not be alone with him. And if they would be subsequently alone, that statement is called kinui, when he puts her on notice. And if the kinui is followed by stira, if subsequently the woman, the married woman, is alone with that other man, so then she's a sota safek, asura labaila, unless you can use Mei Sota and Mei Samikdash to prove her innocence. At that point, there's enough evidence of a possible chet that we consider her a Safik Eshes Eshes Insom. And a surah to her husband, Misafik, and a surah to this the boyfriend. And even if the marriage with the present husband ends, she's forbidden to the boyfriend, Misafe, because she may be Eshes Shazinsa, Asrul Abal, Vasrul Abal. So we saw in the last Sif that the Truma Sadeshin had said, there's no Baal Beir if it's Libo Gaspa. Certainly, if it's Kina La Baila, the husband said, I think there's some hanky panky going on between you and this guy, you shouldn't be alone. So they can't even be alone with Baal Beir. So all Truma Sadeshin also cannot be alone if it's Pesach Pasuach. They have to be mamish in public. They cannot be in a private space where there's access to the public. Ve'echeinu, let's just read the Chayim Tzolk Beishmo. I love to take questions. Ve'echeinu b'trumas hadeshen. Tav hei is trumas hadeshen. Trumas hadeshen is one of the late Chachmei Ashkenaz, one of the late Rishonim in Germany from a couple of generations before the Ramah. Simon Reish Mem Dalet. And you take a look at the Beishmo, he quotes this with a twist. Keep your eyes open. What does he add? Very subtle. If there was kinois, then Pesach Pasuach doesn't help. That if Libo Gaspa, there's also no Pesach Pasuach. What did the Beis Shmuel add to the way the Chachas Mechokek presented it? What he added is who said what. What he added is that the fact that Pesach Pasuach is not in play when it's kinui labayla, when there's kinui, that's a Trumas Hadeshen. But the fact that the more common case of Libo Gaspa, that's the chiddush of the Chalukas Mechogeg based on the Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen is the one who said kinui labayla is aser, negates Baala Beer and negates Pesach Pasuach. So the Chalukas Mechogeg is saying, well, if that's the case, the Libo Gaspa also, just like it doesn't work by Baila Be'ir, does not work by Pesach. It's a chiddush of the Trumas of the Chalukas Mechokek, based on Trumas Hadeshen. It is very, very significant. Very significant. And it allows us to add a very common case of of Libo Gaspa. One hopes that a couple that's engaged are Libo Gaspa. You hope that they're excited to be together. There's a familiarity. Unless if you have a chassidish style dating, so then it could be it's not libo gaspa. Okay, if you grow up in chassidish circles, then you should date chassidish style. If you don't grow up in chassidish circles, you should not date chassidish style. So if you're not, if you're dating outside of a chassidish context, so hopefully by the time a couple's engaged, even when they're before engaged but dating more seriously, one hopes that that is a libo gaspa. One hopes that that is a libo gaspa. So obviously that doesn't come up by Baal Be'ir, because if a woman's already married, she should not be engaged to someone else. Right. But Pesach Pasuach will come up. That's very important. So an engaged couple needs to be even more careful about Yichud. They need to stay in even more public. That's what the Chalukas Mechokek is asserting. That itself is an important comment. Sometimes people make a grave error, a grave misconception. Sometimes people think, once we're engaged, we could take liberties. It's tempting to take liberties. It's tempting to hold hands. It's tempting to play, to take liberties with Hilchos Yichud. And it is absolutely wrong. You get married, then Hilchos Yichud will not apply. You get married, Nigiyah is not usher. Clearly, unless she's neither. Right? That's when intimacy and physical expressions of affection are not only mutter, but absolutely appropriate, happy, healthy, holy, wonderful. But until you have chuppah v'kiddushin, there's absolutely no heter whatsoever for yichud, for negiah, not in the slightest. As a matter of fact, Chalukas Mechokek argues you should be more machmer for obvious reasons. You should have an even higher standard of care about Hilchos Yichud as a couple becomes more emotionally attached to one another. Baruch Hashem, they're emotionally attached. Baruch Hashem, they're attracting each other. That's a wonderful thing. And you have to appreciate that and respect the nisyonos that that creates and take appropriate steps to be even more careful about. You'll give your wife-to-be a very, very, very special sentimental smile when you come to Badekin. Half hour before the chuppah, you will absolutely not lay a finger on her. Wait, absolutely wait. You like her very, 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 very much, and everything waits for its proper moment. Just like you don't start eating you know, before Ne'ilah. Oh, Yom Kippur's almost over, right? Right, you know. It's only an hour left, so let's have some supper. I don't know. Yom Kippur's very holy. After Yom Kippur's also very holy. After Yom Kippur, there's a holy mitzvah to eat, a Sudas mitzvah, and on Yom Kippur, there's a holy mitzvah to not eat a speck. So once you're married, there's an absolutely holy mitzvah to express one's emotional engagement to one's wife in physical terms as well. And before Chuppah Kiddushin, there is a holy mitzvah to absolutely avoid any physical contact. And absolutely avoid any concern of yichud. And again, like I said, perhaps an even higher level. And now let's wrap this all together, and that will wrap up our discussion of Pesach Pasuach. And let's wrap these issues together, and let's bounce back for, let's tie this together with the Baal HaBi'ur. And then we'll be glad to take more questions. So number one, in terms of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is a pretty well-accepted definition. In terms of these two open issues that we just spoke about, the question of how do you define Pasuach and to whom does it apply? So my impression is that many poskim sort of combine the issues. That in other words, that assuming that it's appropriate, assuming it's not Mechura Adavar, we're willing to accept the more makel position of the Radvaz, that if people, if it's a real possibility of people popping in, that's fine if it's not Libo Gaspa. But if it's Libo Gaspa, then we would demand the higher standard of Kiveger. There should be real visibility. Reshech says Nusach, I think sometimes if the Machlokes be Kiveger and the Beis Meir versus Radvaz, is Pesach Pasuach a heter? Or if Pesach Pasuach is not yichud at all. If people can see you, that's just not yichud. Not that it's yichud, but it's mutter. That's not yichud. Everyone walking by sees you, that's not private. But if you're willing to go with the lower standard of the Radvaz, or Rabbi Neuberger formulates as a situation of uninhibited entry, as people feel uninhibited about coming in, that's yichud. That's what Hashem says. It's yichud with a heter. It's like Baal HaBi'ur. We're alone, but alone in a way that's mutter because of the factor of Baal HaBi'ur. So the Radvaz is a factor that's mutter. And that's what I think what Yossi was saying before. The fact that people come in, that's actually a lot, it puts me on edge. So that's alone is a factor that's mutter. I think that's the way we usually assume. If it's Libo Gaspa, then we demand visibility. If it's not Libo Gaspa, then we're willing, assuming that's appropriate, we're willing to go just with people having unfettered access to this space, and the real chance, not just like theoretically people who walk in. I know the door's unlocked. Yeah, but no, you and I know no one else is going to try your door. No, people might actually walk in. That we would rely on if it's not Libo Gaspa or Nebuch, Kino Lavaila. And finally, let's tie this back to the previous sif also. Here's what's fascinating. Rashi, the those who adopt the approach of Rashi understood that Baal HaBi'ur is the husband might actually show up. And that was a more limited view of Rashi in understanding Baal HaBi'ur. So we said we generally accept the position of the Rambam. If it's a husband, he doesn't have to be popping in. The husband-wife relationship is unique. The fact that the husband is proximate, that he's around, that's already enough to be matir. But anyone who might actually pop in is matir also. That's the Shabir Rav's take on the Radvaz. If people might actually be entering, that's the Radvaz's understanding of Pesach Pasuach. Anyone who might be entering is already matir. While a husband, it's not just that the husband is an example of someone who might enter. I mean, the most likely person to walk into the house is the husband. That's true. The Rav said, no. Baal HaBi'ur is more than that, like we saw in the Mishnah, right? Ishto Ima is matir even more than any other shomer, right? Even if she's asleep. See here too, the husband, the presence of the husband, that's matir more than anyone else. Anyone else has to be, either they can see you, or they might actually be popping in. The husband, even though not only can he not see, he's not even popping in, just the fact that he's Ba'ir, we pass on to Rambam, that already, the unique relationship of husband and wife is such, at least in a normal healthy situation, the husband's proximity is already enough to be matir. So again, Pesach Pasuach has to be a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim in the functional sense. And whether you're in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim or Pasuach Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and it has to be halacha l'maisa, in a normal situation, we would allow either for visibility or a real chance of people popping in. If it's libo gaspa, then many posts would say, in that case, we would demand a higher standard of Yekiva Eger. We would say, once it's libo gaspa, we're not comfortable with the chance that people could pop in. It needs to be real visibility. Should it come up, should obviously, as with the rest of this, sometimes specific shiles need to be asked. We'll take questions now. Next time, we're going to move on to the last couple of dinim and some of the applications. There are a couple of issues we still haven't touched on. Sif Yud has some particular women who can serve as shomros. And Sif Yud Aleph continues the conversation about ages for yichud, which is very important, especially if you're a babysitter. Then we'll talk a little bit also, one of the open issues we haven't discussed is the question of the shir's man. How long do you have to be alone together for it to count as yichud? There were those who felt that taking the elevator is a problem of yichud. That's not generally accepted, unless you have a very, very, very slow elevator. Right, and remember, the fact that the elevator, even if you're planning to go from bottom to top, but the fact that the elevator door could open at any floor, like you get into the elevator in Belfer with a woman on the ground floor and you're both going to the 12th floor. So even if you thought that from 1 to 12, it's a long enough trip to Shir Yichud, which I don't think it is, but anyone could enter, you have no idea if it's about to open on floor 3 or 7 or 10. So that's mamish, the Radvaz. There's a door that could open at any moment. Any 10 seconds, the door might open. That's absolutely Pesach. Maybe we'll talk some more about cars going forward, and maybe we'll talk some more about the babysitter situation and the medical situation. These are practical. How if you're going to be a psychologist in private practice, how do you organize that in a way that's both professionally appropriate and in keeping with the sensitivities of Hilchas Yichud? So those are topics to come. Let's take some questions. And let's talk about our schedule. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe you said Rabbi Moshe Hartzib says that a car is there is yichud in the car because you can drive anywhere. Right?
Yeah, so let's hold off on the cars for now.
No, but it applies. I mean, like, let's say if a man and woman were in Mrs. Streffy's old office, Mrs. Streffy can just walk.
Yeah, we generally do not assume like that. Like Rav Moshe's hanacha. In other words, we generally assume that if you're in a yichud situation now, that's a problem. But if we're in public, and then we're in public, well, we could step into that door and no one will see us. That's not generally assumed to be yichud. Yichud means right now you're not visible. Right now we're visible, but people could see us walk in that door. That's not a problem. Yeah.
What was the connection that you said between Baal
Be'er
and
Achol Dayan? Oh, yeah. For Rashi, Rashi's version of Baal Be'er is almost an example of the Radvaz's version of Pesach Pasuach. And Radvaz is saying anyone, if there's anyone who can walk in, that's already Matir. Rashi was talking about just be the husband. Now it could just be that Rashi might accept the Radvaz and say husband is an example, or it could be Rashi would have accepted Rabbi Akiva Eiger's version of Pesach Pasuach, and it's only the husband whose possible entry is going to be matir. But either way, we accept halacha l'maaseh the Rambam. So we see the husband certainly as being, even if you accept the Radvaz's more expansive understanding of Pesach Pasuach, but the husband is special. The husband doesn't have to be that he might pop in. Even if he won't pop in, dafka the husband only, the fact that the best friend is in town, that doesn't help. The fact that the husband, hopefully the husband is the best friend. But it's dafka if the husband's in town. The fact that her father is in town, the fact that her uncle is in town, that doesn't help. If the uncle might actually show up, that's matir. But the husband, we pass on the ground, the husband, even if he's not actually going to show up, he just called his wife and said he's about to step into court for what promises to be a 3-hour hearing, and he's 45 minutes away. See, even if things get canceled after 10 minutes, there's no way he's going to be back. It's going to take him at least an hour to get home. So, but we pass another Rambam, but still, if he's in town, if it's Ba'ir, that's still Motu. But that's unique to the husband-wife relationship. No other person would be Matir merely by proximity. But other people would be Matir by the possibility of their real possibility of their entry. Yeah? I'm sorry?
What about the ear and Pesach?
So it's certainly mutter.
What about the legal
basket? Ah, that's interesting. I don't know. That's a good child. And does the Liba Gaspa get knocked off by the first one and the second one stands? I'm not sure. I've got to take a look at this. It's a type of Shai Divrei Sofer might deal with. The Divrei Sofer is a modern Sefer, a very recently written Sefer. He wrote like a Mishnah Berurah style Sefer on several non-Orach Chaim topics. He wrote on Ribbis, he wrote on Shemitah's Ksafet maybe, and he wrote on Yichud. Some other areas also. And he writes like a Mishnah Berurah style, like Mishnah Berurah B'er Halacha Shaar Tzion. The one of the things he does is he has a verbal chart at the beginning of the Sefer. He doesn't do it as a chart, he does it in prose, so it's a little more complicated. But basically, all the different heterim, each one has its exception, right? Baal Be'er, but not Libo Gaspa. Shnei Anashim, but not Prutzim, and so on and so forth. So he tries to work out like the 2x2 matrix. Does Baal Be'er work if they're Prutzim? Shnei Anashim work if it's Libo Gaspa? Like, he tries to line them all up and figure out how all the exceptions interact with all the different heterim. So he might deal with this. If you have one exception, but you have two reasons he matir, I would think it probably is not mutter, because Libo Gaspa, it doesn't like run out of steam. It's going to negate, I would think it would negate both. I would think it's usher, but it's worth looking into. It's an interesting question. Avremel.
What did the Shavim or Rambam say about the husband being stronger than everybody else?
The Rambam is the one who the first to formulate Pesach Pasuach as Baal Be'er, as being mutter, even if the husband has no chance the husband is actually going to walk in. And the Achronim say that explicitly, but it seems to be rooted in the language of the Rambam. And it's the feeling, the nerve, as the Chazanish put it, that's generated by the husband's proximity. Shabina Rav is the one who says that if there's anyone who there's a real likelihood he's going to be walking through the door, that already is matir based on Pesach Pasuach. If you take the Rambam's understanding of Baal Be'er, Baal Be'er is still a step beyond that. As the husband is even more matir, anyone walking in will be matir, the husband is matir even if he won't walk in. Yes, it is. We're going to get to that. Yeah, we'll get to that. That's coming up next time, Richam. Right. How old... you're right. There are two issues in terms of ages. One is, when is someone young enough there's no Issa Yichud with that person? The other question is, when is someone too young to serve as a shomer? Right. That you put your finger on a very important issue, which we're going to pick up with Bali Neder next time. Great, yeah. It's for one of two reasons. Either it's because they're asked yichud right now. This isn't yichud. There is a gemara, I should say. Maybe we can take a look next time. Leonardo, that does seem to talk about certain cases where you might have that logic, but definitely not broadly so. So you could just say this is yichud. And again, if you're worried, there's always room to make personal gzeiros. So Chazal didn't ask for this. But if you're worried that this situation I may not withstand, no one's probably mechur adavar, and if it's not, then maybe be called for a personal siyag. And it's certainly true in cars, and maybe we'll talk more about cars next time, as sometimes there's a yichud in cars, sometimes there's no yichud in car. Even if there's no yichud, sometimes it's appropriate and sometimes it's not appropriate. That mechur adavar is an independent reason to walk away from a situation. But also, I think part of it is not only this isn't yichud, the isser was yichud, but also typically, if you're in public, so the assumption is someone might also see two of you walking into that private situation. That's not always going to be the case, but that's a piece of the puzzle also. Now, the same way where people can see us, so hopefully that will inhibit us from being... from getting physical with one another, but also people can see us, hopefully will inhibit us from walking into a prior room together, people are like, what's going on there? Now, obviously, one person go in and the other person go in. There are ways to organize it. I think those are the two pieces together. A, it, right now it's not Yichud. This is an Yichud. And often this the your visibility, your publicness will inhibit you from entering Yichud. Okay, so we're going to stop here for now. We'll pick up going forward.